Welcome back to the Band Radio Special with Robbie Robertson. After the success of music from Big Pink, the band decided to move their base of operation from Woodstock to Los Angeles, looking for a small house they could record in and write songs for their second album, much in the same fashion they did for their first. They ended up at the unlikely destination of the Pool House in a home owned by Sammy Davis Jr.
We wanted to find a place, like we did find, where we could have a clubhouse that where we could make music. Now, when we were doing the basement tapes and the whole Big Pink movement and then recording in Sammy Davis Jr.'s pool house in L.A., this was highly, highly unusual at the time. Nobody was doing this. If you were going to make a record, you went into a recording studio. But we found it was like going into somebody else's atmosphere. It was somebody else's clock that was running in there. And we thought, no, it needs to be our clock. And we had discovered something in the basement tapes, too, finding a realism in the music, in the songs, that didn't have anything to do with all of those obvious things. And the idea of building our own atmosphere that really made us feel comfortable, that's where we could do our best work. It was interesting that at that time, this is 1968, 69, 70, in that period, we didn't really have any affiliation with the label. We just said, okay, now we're going to make a record. And they were like, let us know if there's anything we could do. So we said, yeah, there is something you could do. So they sent us the equipment for us to make our second record. They sent it over to Sammy Davis Jr.'s house. And with John Simon's help, you know, we hooked it all up and also recording that way, there's a certain character of your own in the music. And because we had done this work at Big Pink, when we went and recorded in a studio and they set us all up the way they do in a studio, we said, this isn't it. We got to set up in a circle. We have to see one another's eyes when we're doing this. We got to know what the other person's going to do next, you know? And they were like, but there'll be leakage. We can't do that. That's not how you make records. And they adapted to what we wanted to do, and it gave the record a sound of its own. And obviously recording in, you know, in your own place and everything, it takes on the character of that atmosphere.
When I get off of this mountain, you know where I wanna go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. Charles, Louisiana, little Bessie girl I once knew. And she told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have to speak. And she defends me a drunkard's dream if I ever did see stung me to the racetrack I did go. She bet on one horse to win and I bet on another to show. The odds were in my favor, I had them 5-1. And that nag to win came around the track, sure enough we had won. Up on Cripple Creek, and she sends me in my spring a leap. She mends me, I don't have the speed. She defends me, a drunkard's dream. If I ever did see more,
my little Bessie had. And she tore it up and threw it in my face, just for a laugh. Now there's one thing in the whole wide world I sure would like to see. That's when that little love of mine dips a donut in my teeth. Up on Cripple Creek, and she sends me if I spring a leak. And she mends me, I don't have to speak. She defends me, a drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one. Now me and my mate were back at the shack. We had Spike Jones on the box. She said, I can't take the way he sang, but I love to hear him talk. Now that just gave my heart a throb to the bottom of my feet. Bessie can't be beat. Up on Cripple Creek, and she sends me if I spring a leak. And she mends me, I don't have to speak. And she defends me, a drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one. Again. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have to speak. She defends me, a drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one.
That's Up on Cripple Creek from the band's second album, which was simply titled The Band. It would pick up where music from Big Pink had left off and more, and would catapult the group to international status. Nicknamed the Brown Album by fans and selected on many best albums of all time lists in publications like Rolling Stone, Time Magazine, Q, and Mojo since its release, it has come to be regarded as their masterpiece. Among the many amazing songs on the record, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down still stands out today. Composed by Robbie, the song describes the last days of the Civil War and the suffering of the South.
It took me a while to write that song. I wrote the music for it, and I had a melody in mind. And once again, I thought I wanted to write something for Levon that that he could really touch a nerve with, and just because, you know, we were such close friends and so close musically and family-wise and all of that, I reached into my satchel of you know, ideas and things, and I thought this idea would be something that he could do, you know, once again, in an extraordinary way, in a powerful musical way. But it took me a while before I got it all in shape and everything. And finally, when I did have it all together and I played it for the other guys in the group, they had an understanding of what that album, a centerpiece of that album.
Virgil Caine is a name, and I served on the Danville train till Stoneman's cavalry came, and
and tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond had fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove old Dixie down, and the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down.
With all of the success of their second album, the group, and specifically Robbie Robertson, found himself in the middle of a media storm. They were no longer an unknown band.
It's hard to describe, you know, what this does to the human spirit when fame and fortune enters the room. And a lot of people... A lot of people try their best to keep their feet on the ground. Some people just go with it. But a certain insanity sets in that. And we see it all the time. I mean, it's old news. And you would think, we had been together 7 years when we made Music from Big Pink. We didn't get guitars for Christmas and say, hey, let's start a band. You know, we had paid our dues. We had, you know, we had reached a deeper place in putting our music together. And then when this kind of popularity or fame or whatever came along, like it does to most people, it sent... individuals, we weren't in the same circle anymore. It sent individuals in different directions. And we had to pull everybody back in every time to do something. And along with that, in that period as well, you know, there was incredible indulgence in drugs and craziness and stupid rock and roll ideas, which was a lot of fun and everything, but it's dangerous. You know, it turned out to be dangerous. And I know as well as anybody, you know, there's, you know, I was, when by the time, jumping later, by the time we made The Last Waltz, you know, part of that message for me was that, you know, an awareness to this danger and this craziness. And sure enough, some of the guys in my band died.
Although the band released four albums between 1968 and 1971, it wasn't until that tour of 1971 that the group found themselves as headliners. It was great timing because the band themselves thought they were truly on a roll.
Maybe for the first time, as the band playing for audiences. And that's what I meant about we just hit a stride, and it just felt good, and we were looking forward to it. Everybody was reasonably healthy at that time, which could go in and out too, just because of, you know, living through the 60s and 70s was a challenge unto itself, you know, regarding health. And this was just a pocket in there where, our feet weren't quite touching the ground. You know, we were floating, and the music just went with that. And that's why I was so happy that we got to capture this on the Rock of Ages concerts that we did.
Go out yonder, he's in the valley. Come to New York and have the rumble in the alley. Oh, you don't know the shape I'm in. Has anybody seen my lady? Just living alone, but driving me crazy.
When we come back, we'll talk more with Robbie Robertson about the infamous 1971 New York shows that became the original Rock of Ages live album, and why he decided to revisit and remix it for a new 4-CD plus 1-DVD release entitled Live at the Academy of Music 1971, The Rock of Ages Concerts. We'll also chat about the last show that ended that tour in New York, and their very special guests that played with them for a final New Year's Eve concert. This is the Band Radio Special.